team he's ever played against.
Do you think that's more of a personnel issue or more of a
scheme? He's dominating
issue?
Like the Jets wanted him to do.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve. Now, Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Richard Pollock on your home of the Winnipeg Jets and all things hockey. TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
Ahead for Scheifele. Scheifele cuts in. Scheifele takes it around the net. Centers. Thorburn scores. Chris Thorburn on the line change in the high slot takes the Scheifele pass, and the Jets are on the board. It is 5-1.
Alas, they did not get any closer than that 5-1 margin Sunday evening versus the Montreal Canadiens. Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live at TSN1290.ca, good evening, universe. Welcome to NHL This Week, a special Tuesday edition of the program. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside my colleagues, Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. And the Winnipeg Jets are in the midst of a four-game road trip. The first two this past weekend successful in Columbus. Not successful, which is about as complimentary as you can get. On Sunday versus the Montreal Canadiens, losing by that 5-1 margin. Gentlemen, good evening. Welcome to the program. How are you both doing?
Yeah, good evening, boys. It was certainly a disappointing loss on Sunday night, but this Winnipeg Jets team has played really well over the first 12 games of the season, and I think just by the way they lost, everybody is a little bit up in arms now, Richie and Drew. But I think when you look at the team they were playing and kind of the circumstances and just the fact that it was generally a stinker for the team, and no matter which team you are, you're going to have those types of games. Look at the Dallas Stars going into Toronto last night, the second best team in the Western Conference, and they go in there and they lose to a terrible Toronto team, a team that hadn't won on home ice before that game, right? So the Winnipeg Jets didn't play well, but they played really exceptionally against the Columbus Blue Jackets, I thought. I thought they made the Columbus Blue Jackets look as bad as their record is, Richie. So it was a terrible game, but I don't think that you can extrapolate too much out of this game when you factor in that the Montreal Canadiens are a really good team. Maybe not as good as the record indicates because they're, what, 12-2 now? Mm-hmm. But it was a bad game, and the Jets were in a situation where they're coming in second game of a back-to-back. It's not an excuse, Rich, but it was a bad game. But they're still 4-2 on the road. They're still 7-4-1 on the season. Mm-hmm. And you got to clean up the defensive play, though, because there were just too many turnovers in that game.
Yeah, I wouldn't read too much into the loss if I'm a Jets fan. You played against a really good team. You had an off night. When you play a really good team with an off night, that's what happens on the road. Now, did they let their guard down at all because they weren't facing Carey Price? It's human nature to let it down a little bit. I mean, even if Mike Conn is going to be good, he's not going to be as good as the best goaltender in the world, who, you know, you were surprised to see wasn't in the net. So that may be a factor, but in reality, you weren't in sync. You missed on the power plays early in the game. Defensively, as you mentioned, the breakdowns were pretty bad. Now, defensively, I think it's been a concern for the most part all year. You gave up 40-plus shots to Chicago. You can say many of those were from the perimeter. Sure, some of them were not from the perimeter. And this team was also capitalizing on those chances. So I think it's not something that is caused to be alarmed, but it's something to make the players aware, and I'm sure the coaching staff's already aware, and the players likely aware, that your mistakes won't always go into the pad or the glove of Pavlik and Hutchinson.
And what you saw Sunday was a sort of a culmination of everything bad that could happen sort of came together on Sunday evening. The Jets had their opportunities. I mean, when you start a game by getting three power plays in the first 11 minutes, you score on one of those power play opportunities, it's a different tone to the entire game. Instead, what happens, you give up the shorthanded goal to Paul Byron, and, you know, 11 minutes into the game, you're demoralized. And the Jets didn't seem like they had any fight in them on Sunday evening. You know, I'm not going to press a panic button because it's one game and it's, you know, there's been no evidence that it's going to be a reoccurrence. If it happens again tomorrow against the Toronto Maple Leafs, the woeful Toronto Maple Leafs, different story altogether. And Saturday's Illegal Curve Hockey Show has probably a different tone to it. But you ran into a very good Montreal Canadiens team. You did not have, never mind your A game, you didn't have your C game probably. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think to some extent you could probably even take some positives out of it in that, you know, don't read your own press clippings. You're not as good as, you know, people, you know, Hockey Night in Canada is pumping your tires on Saturday. It's a battle of the two best Canadian teams.
I don't think the standard for that's particularly high, though, Drew.
I don't think the standard for that's particularly high either. The Canadian teams, besides Montreal, you know, are decidedly average, I would suggest, this year. But in any event, you know, it's a reminder that, hey, you don't work hard, you don't do all the little things, you're going to play a good team, this is what's going to happen. You're going to get your behind kicked.
Right, and the Toronto game coming up tomorrow night is a game that they should win. As we mentioned, the Leafs have only won two games here. And even though they have talented players, I mean, you watched last night when the Leafs are skating and they get contributions from their top players, Nazem Kadri, Joffrey Leupel. You saw Brad Boyes get his first of the season, but defenseman jumping up into the rush, Morgan Rielly, who really is going to be the only player that's untouchable, Rich, mm-hmm. as far as, you know, this team goes. You're going to see some of these players get moved towards the trade deadline. It's inevitable, Drew, because this Toronto Maple Leafs team just probably won't be a factor when it comes around to March. At least
it
we,
won't
ex-
be.
We expect
probably,
them to not
be.
And the start
and
hasn't helped them.
They acquired these guys to trade them.
Well, right. And
just good asset management, yeah, by the way.
Well, they also needed players in the lineup because they have so many young players that just aren't ready. William Nylander's not ready. Mitch Marner's not ready. These guys are 2 or 3 years away, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, this Montreal Canadiens team, we talked about it a couple weeks ago, Drew. I remember you asked us the question, is this team for real? Well, I want to see this team after 25 or 30 games as opposed to just after 12 or 13 games or whatever it is right now. But, I mean, this team has a lot of depth. And you see with Galchenyuk moving to center, that allows David Desharnais to go to third-line center, mm-hmm. which I think is a lot more effective as a use for him. You saw Thomas Fleischmann get two goals. I mean, that's a really good third line. And then you throw in Paul Byron, you mentioned. He's got two shorties on the year, Rich. Torrey Mitchell, a guy who's bounced around. These are guys that were claimed off of waivers, are basically, you know, taken off the scrap heap and picked up off the scrap heap. Brian Flynn is another guy. That's a good fourth line. This Montreal Canadiens team is not one-dimensional anymore. I think their defense is underrated. It's not a top five, maybe not even top 10 defense, but it's solid. They can move the puck. I mean, sometimes they get running around in their own zone, Rich. Guys like, you know, Petrie has some problems, but Bolia, I've been very impressed by in his first couple of years in the league. It's a good team, and again, the Jets had one of those games where it was a stinker, and you can't expect to make those types of defensive turnovers and not have it come to bite you, and you know, you have to move on, and you have to be ready to face this Leafs team, because even though this Leafs team is a team that you should beat, they beat the Dallas Stars last night, and as we know, that Stars team is looking pretty good these days.
And we'll preview the Jets and the Leafs and the Jets and the Senators coming up next segment, of course. The Jets goaltending on Sunday night, like the entire team, wasn't very good. Michael Hutchinson shelled, you know, really, the very poor performance by the Jets and by Hutchinson.
I thought only one of those goals, Drew, was maybe a little bit shaky, but I thought for the most part, after those four goals, you got to pull him at that point. I think... The goal, especially the first shorthanded goal, the result of a turnover, Buff, you know, overcommits. And then on the fourth goal, you had Tyler Myers that was caught out of position, and then he just couldn't get back. Didn't think any of those goals, that was Desharnais' goal that he scored. I don't think you can blame him. So even though Michael Hutchinson didn't have a good game, Rich, I don't think by any means that means that you're going to see Hutchinson sit out for the next week. I still think Maurice is going to stick with the rotation.
You would think you stick to the rotation for the next two games because they're back-to-backs.
Sure. It's almost the schedule plays into needing a rotation uh-huh. still. It's after that the question is, does one of the two, either Pavlik or Hutchinson, you know, take the ball and run with it? From my perspective, and I could have a very different perspective than you, even though Hutchinson had the better numbers than Pavlik, I thought that Pavlik had been just as solid, if not more solid, than Hutchinson through their starts in the course of the season so far. I mean, I know Pavlik's numbers weren't as good, and maybe I'm a Pavlik apologist, and, you know, that very much could be the case. I thought that there's a lot of games where the Jets were only in the game or only were down by a goal because of his performance, and you don't see that in the numbers necessarily. Hutchinson had been good for the Jets, but there were times when I thought Hutchinson's numbers were inflated and Pavlik's numbers were deflated based on how I saw the game unfolding.
And Hutchinson's got, I think, the tougher competition. He goes up against Chicago, and I realize that Chicago's a better team, but, you know, you talk about Andre Pavlik being a little bit better. or better, just in general, Drew, I wouldn't disagree with that. I think Andre Pavlik has played exceptionally well in games that he's lost. So you know, if I'm leaning towards one goaltender getting more starts in November, it's probably Pavlik. But again, when you have a team that has two really good goaltenders who were able to share the net last year and you're winning, I think that's the key, Richie. If this team keeps winning and especially keeps doing well on the road because they have 10 of 14 games on the road in November, I don't see Paul Maurice giving Andre Pavlik 80% of the starts. I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, I don't either. I mean, it's just one game. I mean, they're doing a rotation. I still think it's pretty clear Pavlik's 1A and Hutchinson's 1B, and keep both guys rested, and they think that'll lead to the most success. So, I mean, if he continues to struggle, if there's another poor game from Hutchinson, then maybe they play Pavlik a few more games in a row. I think all back-to-backs will be a split, and then I think you can read on after that. But I still think at the end of the day, in a big game, Pavlik is the guy to play. And Hutchinson's there to keep him fresh, and because he's played very well. One bad game against the Habs for the whole team isn't going to change that, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, the way the schedule's unfolded, it's set up perfectly. If Paul Maurice wanted to continue with the rotation that we saw for the majority of last year, worth noting, of course, not the end of the year last year, where Pavlik took the number one job and ran with it. You know, from in the last month of the season. But you look at the schedule and what they've played, you know, what, 8 road games, and all of them have been back-to-back situations? Or, you know, they've been 4 pairs of 2.
Are you talking about so far?
So far, the Jets.
6 road games.
And then coming up Wednesday, Thursday, another one.
Yep.
I mean, it's sort of unique in that the road schedule sees that many back-to-backs right off the start, you know, to start the season.
Well, because you rarely play any back-to-backs at home.
Right.
That's where your back-to-back is going to be.
Are generally on the road. But, I mean, it's not even been, you know, it's not really even been 3 and 4 nights sort of thing. They've had, you know, they started with the back-to-backs, 2 days off. Back-to-back again, big break. On the road, back-to-back, 2 days off. Back-to-back again, Wednesday, Thursday, and then home Saturday. So that's 3 and 4 nights.
And that's the reason to believe, it is the reason to believe, I should say, that you should expect Pavlik to play against Toronto, Hutchinson to play against Ottawa, and then Pavlik to play Saturday at home against the Flyers. And then when you go into the following games, you know, Wild, Stars, Predators,
different
Blues
ball
on the
game
road,
there.
Maybe you lean on one of the goaltenders, but maybe you go with whoever's the hottest, right? And so if Pavlik lays a stinker against the Philly Flyers, maybe they ride Hutchinson on the road trip. But I still think it's too early. I agree with you, Drew. Towards the end of last year, when Michael Hutchinson started to struggle, they needed to go to Andre Pavlik. Because as Richie mentioned, whether you want to call him 1A, 1, whatever, he's under contract. He has the long-term contract, I should say. He's the number one goalie until Michael Hutchinson really proves that. And he did. Michael Hutchinson got the majority of starts towards December or January of last year, more so January, when he started to play better. But right now, you have two good goaltenders. And again, it's, you know, a good debate for us to have. But I think for Paul Maurice, he doesn't overthink it too much, and he makes sure that he is getting both of his goaltenders in on a regular basis. I think it's the rotation for now.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Jets and the Leafs tomorrow evening, and then the Jets and the Senators on Thursday night. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
The reason the Leafs have won their second game last night, despite being badly outplayed and relying on James Reimer, they just don't have enough good players. And when you don't have enough good players, you're not going to win very many good games. And when you start to say, oh, we got to dig deeper, well, you might be hitting stone. And so the spade isn't going to work.
Brutal honesty from TSN's Craig Button talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs. Good for them winning the game last night against the Dallas Stars. They are, of course, the Winnipeg Jets opponent tomorrow evening at Air Canada Centre, a game you can hear live, of course, on TSN 1290. Welcome back to NHL This Week. This segment is brought to you by our friends at Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys has become known as the world's best jersey customizer. Keener's knowledge of jerseys is unsurpassed. If you want awesome jerseys for your team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com or find them on your next opponent. The Jets and the Leafs tomorrow evening at Air Canada Centre. The Leafs a 2-7-2 record for 6 points thus far in the NHL season. Is this the worst team in the NHL in your mind, guys?
It's one of the worst teams in the NHL. And they beat the Dallas Stars. But even if you're a bad team, guys, you're going to beat good teams like the Dallas Stars. And Craig Button's right, by the way. The Toronto Maple Leafs, their entire management, their coaching staff, they knew that they weren't going to be very good this year. I mean, what's the best case scenario, Richie? They make the playoffs, they squeak in.
The best case scenario is Austin Matthews.
No, but I mean,
that's the best case scenario. They don't care about the season.
But I'm just saying, like, best case scenario meaning if they win.
Austin Matthews. They don't want to win.
My point was that if it's not a good team is the point
right.
I was trying
to
make.
And that's according to plan, Izzy. They don't want to win. They signed a bunch of flakes to trade at the deadline. Brad Boys, Parenteau, all those guys are going to be traded out. They brought him in to get fifth or fourth round picks for him to fill, to be terrible, to try and get Austin Matthews.
Right, and this Toronto Maple Leafs team can hurt you from a few different lines. But after you get away from those top two lines, and right now you have Nazem Kadri and you have Tyler Bozak essentially as 1A and 1B centers, similar to the Winnipeg Jets, but I'll take the Winnipeg Jets' top two centers over the Toronto Maple Leafs' top two centers. But it's a mishmash of talent, and you have fairly solid goaltending. James Reimer made 43 saves last night. James Reimer, by the way, if you look at his statistics, they had it on TSN, That's Hockey, last night. When James Reimer faces more than 40 shots, his record is ridiculously good. He's the type of goalie that really likes to see a lot of rubber in order for him to get into the game. So James Reimer is going to start tomorrow night versus the Winnipeg Jets, which is fitting because he's from Manitoba. But this isn't a team that's going to scare you, Drew. I mean, you look at who's on this team. James Van Riemsdyk is their most dangerous scorer in the absence of Phil Kessel. But, you know, Rich mentions a lot of the players that they got either by trade or via PTO, professional tryout. So you're talking, yeah, Parenteau, Daniel Winnick, Brad Boys, who got his first of the year, Michael Grabner, who was traded by the New York Islanders. I mean, these are players that are third and fourth liners on this team, but they wouldn't maybe even be third or fourth liners on a good team because of the young talent that other teams employ, right? So it's a team that you can't take them too lightly, and you can't take the Arizona Coyotes too lightly. You can't take the Carolina Hurricanes too lightly. Ask the Avalanche, who lost two games to the Carolina Hurricanes. But the Jets are going into this game coming off of a loss, and I think everything is pointing towards the Jets being able to win this, and I think they win this lopsided.
I mean, anybody can beat anybody, as you know that, right? That's the NHL and this cap league, but this team's awful. The Leafs are awful. Their forwards are terrible. They have, like, two top six forwards, maybe. The rest of the guys are just a mishmash of, as you said, a mishmash of talent. That's kind. It's a mishmash of players. And it is. I mean, their defense has some talent, right? So there's Desi's point. The defense has talent. Morgan Riley's very talented. Jake Gardner has talent, although I don't think he's in the same ballpark as Morgan Riley. Phaneuf, for his faults, has talent. And Polak can do his job on the bottom pairing, guys like that. So, I mean, they do have, and I agree with Desi on their goaltending is not terrible. Their coaching is good. But the team's off. So the trap you're going to fall into, they've won two games all year. The trap you fall into, you go up against them, you say every matchup we have is favorable. Mm-hmm. You don't put your pedal to the metal. You don't push as hard as you have to. They get you, maybe they get a lead. You make a few mistakes, you force something, try and take advantage of a weakness of theirs, and you get down a bit more, and then you're pressing because you're playing a bad team. That's the only thing here. Their back end can move the puck, though. Okay? So, I mean, what in reality is you're going to spend very little time in your own zone, and it's transitioning out of your own zone because they shouldn't be able to sustain pressure with that offense. And if you can get the puck in, what you want to do with them is you want to be able to carry the puck in the zone and make them defend. I mean, I don't think the Jets are doing this less and less, but dumping and chasing against this Leafs team isn't a great idea. Why? A lot of those guys can move the puck, so you want to keep it away from those guys. You want to make sure you carry it in and make them defend, make their forwards defend. They have a bunch of these parts in wrong spots here. I mean, all these guys want to get new next contracts or eventually can get traded. You don't rely on those guys to defend. So you want to make the forwards defend. You want to involve your defensemen in the offensive zone. You want to make the Leafs have to play as a team.
And if you watch that Dallas-Toronto game yesterday, I mean, Toronto lost every single advanced stat that you could think of. Corsi, Fenwick, whatever. I mean, Dallas was still the better team, and the goal that James Reimer let in was actually a weak goal by Jamie Benn, who's leading the league in points right now. But after that, he didn't let anything in, and he was sensational. Really, the score really wasn't a reflection of the play on the ice, because Dallas, we know, is they're the best offensive team in the NHL. Maybe it's between them and Tampa Bay. Mm-hmm. You can throw in a few teams, Richie. You can throw Montreal in there. You could throw in some other teams. But needless to say, I think we'd all agree, whatever statistics you want to use, this is a top three offensive team. But as Richie mentioned, they can move the puck. They have players that can put the puck in the net. I mean, Joffrey Leupel, he's been injury prone, but he's just starting to get going, and he's one of their top players along with Kadri. We mentioned Van Riemsdyk, but aside from that, you don't have to worry about shutting too many players down on this team. And as opposed to the Montreal Canadiens that play a little bit better, in as not a little bit better, a lot better as a five-man unit, I mean, you watch PK Subban and Andre Markov. I mean, that's one of the best D pairings in the NHL. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Maple Leafs team, once you get past a couple of lines, you don't have to worry about that. So that allows the Jets' third line to really not have any of those shutdown roles, Drew. And that's a perfect recipe for, you know, getting back on the board, because even though the Jets have had a lot of success putting the puck in the net from all three lines, even four lines, with Chris Thorburn scoring a couple nights ago, you know, they're not defending as well as they could have. And their goaltending has really been bailing them out of a lot of games.
Let's shift our focus to the game against Ottawa on Thursday night, because I think we would all agree that is likely to be the more competitive of the two matchups between the Jets play in the next two nights. You know, this Senators team, you know, they're off to a decent start. You know, they're 5-4-2, you know, 35 goals for, 36 goals against, which isn't altogether different from the Jets. You know, the Jets have scored one more goal and only given up three less goals. So there are a lot of similarities here between the Senators and the Jets that the average fan might not see, especially if they don't watch Ottawa all that often?
You know, I think so, Drew. You have a pretty young squad here in Ottawa. You have a lot of homegrown talent. You have a good puck moving back end, sometimes taking opportunities offensively at the expense of defense. You have two solid netminders, you know, in the queue there. So a coach who just came through. Obviously, Dave Cameron doesn't have the experience, Paul Maurice, but he's got the buy-in there, it appears. So, and you have a kind of a smaller market Canadian team who's not going to go splurge in free agency. There's a lot of similarities here to these squads.
The Senators, of course, going to be without Mark Stone for the game against the Winnipeg Jets, as he's been suspended two games for an illegal check to the head.
I mean, I thought the hit looked worse than it actually was with the follow-through of his arm. I think, and we'll talk about this later, I think that players almost they're not getting the benefit of the doubt here on playing physically. And I'm all for defending, you know, and protecting a player's head and protecting from concussions. It's also a physical element of the game, and sometimes people forget how quickly the game is played and how it might look worse than it actually is. He's not a dirty player.
Yeah.
He took issue with the suspension. I can see his point. I thought two games a little bit heavy-handed. One game, I thought, at most. But that's a huge benefit for the Jets. Why? Because he's a very skilled player. Not the fastest guy. Got a very good shot, very smart, can get into open areas. That makes it a lot easier on the Jets' defense, as he'd be able to defend Mark Stone.
Former captain of the Brandon Wheat Kings, of course, so he's familiar with the...
No, it's a good point. Yeah. He tore it up with the Wheaties back in the day. And if it's not for Aaron Ekblad and Johnny Gaudreau, he wins the Calder Trophy. He was good last year, right? And obviously Ekblad deserved to win the Calder Trophy, and Gaudreau wasn't far behind. But the point being that was a pretty good rookie class, and Mark Stone kind of came out of nowhere with the rest of the Ottawa Senators team that around December or January looked like they weren't going to make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And then Andrew Hammond comes in, and we all know the rest of the magical story that was last year for the Ottawa Senators. But this team is going to create a lot more problems for the Winnipeg Jets. We know how good Erik Karlsson is.
Sure.
But if you look at that defense, a couple of years ago when they were struggling big time under Paul MacLean, that was the problem with this team. They couldn't move the puck very well aside from Karlsson. And if you look at that right side, Jared Cowan, Cody Ceci, lots of size. And now they've been in the NHL now for 3 or 4 years. Cowan a little bit longer than Ceci. But this is a good defense, and they have a bunch of scoring lines that can hurt you. And the Jets have had some problems with the Senators over the years. Not saying I think the record's been fairly even, but they've had players that have lit up the Jets. And again, you know, not to say that the Jets aren't going to win these two games against Toronto and Ottawa, but I think if you're Paul Maurice, Charlie Huddy, Pascal Vincent, you're game planning against the Senators, there's a lot more options out there. And that's without Mark Stone in the lineup. I mean, Kyle Turris has really turned into a bona fide number one NHL center couple of years.
Yeah, he really has.
We weren't sure how he was going to be. Bobby Ryan and Curtis Lazar, I know he struggled, but this is a very talented player, former first-round pick. And, you know, I know Milan Mihalik has faded off a little bit there, and he's not really on the top line anymore. Alex Chiasson, another guy that struggled, but needless to say, these guys have talent. These guys can score.
Mike Hoffman's very good.
Skate. Mm-hmm. Mike Hoffman, you know, just got the contract extension after having a good rookie year. So, Ottawa Senators team is good. I didn't pick them to make the playoffs, but I wouldn't be surprised if they end up making the playoffs.
And you're talking about the players. You're talking about a lot of guys who can hurt you offensively, similar to the Jets. They don't have Tyler Seguin, but they have a lot of good players. And similar to the Jets.
Balanced scoring.
Yeah, like Nikolai Ehlers is going to be their guy to be that next level player. Right now, he's on his way there for sure, in my opinion, but it's going to take time. And they have a bunch, and they probably feel similarly to about Mark Stone in Ottawa. And the idea is right now where you're at, you're going with the top nine to try and beat the other team offensively, a balanced attack, similar to the Jets. These teams are very similar in my mind.
That'll be the game on Thursday night. Of course, first the Jets will have to handle the Toronto Maple Leafs tomorrow evening at the Air Canada Centre. That game you can hear live on TSN 1290. Thursday's game also on TSN 1290 and back on TSN 3. Let's head to break. When we come back, Michael Trakos of the National Post is going to join us. We'll talk some more about the Toronto Maple Leafs. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. In the evening. Welcome back to NHL This Week. Alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. This segment is brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend from the National Post, Michael Trakos. Michael, good evening. Thanks very much for joining us. How are you?
Pretty good, guys. Always great to talk to you.
Likewise. So,
hope everything's going all right.
Yeah, everything's going pretty well over here. Now that the Leafs have won their second game of the season last night, have they reconfigured the parade route? Do they now know where it's going as the Cup is obviously coming there immediately?
You know, it's kind of funny. It's like everyone was kind of preparing for this was going to be the season where there was going to be a lot of pain and it was just going to be awful. And basically everything we saw in Buffalo and Arizona and Edmonton extent was going to happen to Toronto this year on purpose. And yet, going into last night's game, it was just kind of like, well, they better win tonight or else I don't know what's going to happen. Like, maybe Mike Babcock isn't the coach. Everyone was kind of making him out to be. It's like everyone kind of forgot that, you know what, this was kind of part of the plan. And yet people are still starving for that win. So, definitely those two points meant a lot to Leaf fans and maybe even guys in the dressing room, because going in there were a lot of kind of heads that were just kind of hanging low the last couple weeks, and especially with the team not scoring. So it's kind of funny, like you want one thing, but then this market, it seems like it's just not quite capable of handling a team that's going to be a loser all year.
Mike, I'll just get the goaltending question right out of the way. James Reimer was amazing last night, and Babcock said that Reimer is going to play tomorrow night against the Winnipeg Jets. How surprised are you that it looks like right now James Reimer is the number one goalie for the Leafs?
Yeah, well, Bernie is hurt too, which kind of helps Babcock make that decision. But even if Bernie was healthy, Bernie hasn't been playing really well, and up until last night, Reimer hadn't been playing very well as well. So I think if you're Mike Babcock, you're just hoping that someone is stopping enough pucks for you to win a game. And there's a funny stat out there where Reimer is actually the franchise leader now in wins where there's 40-plus shots. So it's like he's playing for the right team in that regard, because the Leafs love to give up shots, well, at least prior to Mike Babcock coming here. But you know, there's a lot of fans in Toronto, and I don't know if you've met James Reimer, but there's a lot of fans in Toronto that just love this guy. He's one of the go-to guys for media in the dressing room, just because he's such a nice guy. And even when he's getting kind of passed on by everyone in the organization. He's always got a smile on his face. So there's a lot of us who are kind of secretly rooting for James Reimer to kind of be that guy and kind of be that kind of feel-good story for the Leafs. So yeah, he deserves to get the start against Winnipeg. And you know what, in my mind, I think he deserves to get the start on Friday as well.
You know, Michael, Mike Babcock, of course, you know, gets, you mentioned he's part of the process here and gets all the attention, and there's not many players on the Leafs that really warranted a lot of positive attention, but how has he fared so far? And based on your being around the team now and seeing him, do you think he has the patience to stick with this?
I think he's going to have to, because if you're Mike Babcock, you're smart enough to realize that the players on the roster just aren't good enough. And it's not like he's losing with the same lineup that Randy Carlyle had a year ago, where you've got a Phil Kessel and you've got a lot of guys that were supposed to be pushing for a playoff spot, if not a little more than that. So right away, you look at the forward group and you're going, okay, well, where's the offense? Then you look at the defense and going, wow, if Dion Phaneuf is playing as your number one defenseman, that's still a big problem in Toronto, and the goaltending is not quite where it should be on paper or even on the ice. So I think he's smart enough to realize that he just doesn't have the horses in the stable. When does it get to the point where Babcock goes to Lou Lamoriello or Brendan Shanahan and says, hey, get me some players? Well, I think that's just going to be a natural regression. If you're a Leaf fan and been watching this team, you know that they've picked up a couple of good players in the draft in the last 2 years with William Nylander and Mitch Marner, and they're probably going to get a top five pick again this year or next year's draft. So those are the players that you're really going to hang your hat on, and I think Babcock is smart enough to realize that in due time he's going to get those horses.
You're listening to NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Michael Tracos of the National Post. Michael, I'm a rival general manager, and I want to call up and talk about acquiring Dion Phaneuf. Whose phone number do I dial?
Oh, boy. Are you talking about, like, who you're calling in the front office, or
yeah,
are you saying which team is actually going to be interested in him?
No, no.
I mean, that is both a question mark.
You can take both of those if you want, but, you know, more so, who am I calling in the front office?
Yeah, you know what? I think this is Lou Lamoriello's show, and I don't think there's even any question as to who's calling the shots right now, right down from player personnel to making sure everyone is clean-shaven and has a fresh haircut. This is really a Lou Lamoriello team, and we saw it actually last weekend when Phil Kessel comes back, and typically the Leafs honor everyone, whether you played one game or 1,000 games. For the Toronto Maple Leafs, you get some sort of video montage during one of the intermission, or sorry, one of the TV timeouts. But there was no mention of welcome back Phil Kessel on the video board or any sort of recognition. And that's a loose thing I've been told. And in New Jersey, he didn't like to honor guys that were coming back. And I think right away that tells you that this is a team where he's firmly in control. And while you've got a Kyle Dubas and you've got a Mark Hunter that were placed as interim GMs prior to Lou's arrival, that's no longer the case. Those guys have their responsibilities, but they do not overlap with what Lou's doing.
You know, Mike, just to go back to last night's game for a second, I watched that game, and how surprised were you towards the end of the game, Jamie Benn, Spiri, and Nazem Kadri, how surprised were you that he didn't get a penalty? Because that was pretty vicious. And I guess, what did you think of Kadri's response to Jamie Benn?
Yeah, you know what? That's a good call. And the swipe at Kadri's head as well, which could have nearly taken off the kid's head right off his neck. But, I was a bit surprised no penalties were called. You know, it was kind of garbage time, I guess, at that point. Just from talking to guys who were in that central division with Winnipeg and Chicago, St. Louis, Minnesota, and Colorado, and Nashville, that seems to be the just kind of... par for the course, really. Like, you guys saw that game, I guess, between Winnipeg and St. Louis a couple weeks ago, the one that Ken Hitchcock called, I think, a street fight. So it seems like if you're going to do that, if you're doing it in the Central Division, you almost get a pass in that sense. But, you know, to me, that spoke of Nazem Kadri just getting under the skin of the Dallas players. Like, he had drawn three penalties last night. and he was his antagonizing best. And I think when he's playing that kind of style, he's such a dangerous player because you know he can do things offensively, but when he's also kind of needling you with little dirty plays, and I'm sure a bit of that was going on all throughout the night with Nazem, and he gets into the skin of a Jamie Benn, I think that's when you know he's being successful.
You know, Mike, sticking with Nazem Kadri, Drew asked you, you know, a couple of minutes ago about Dion Phaneuf, but Nazem Kadri seems to be one of these players that everybody has already basically sent out of Toronto. Everyone's assuming that it's a foregone conclusion that Nazem Kadri will be traded before the trade deadline. But when you consider that he's 25 years old and really hasn't even come close to reaching his potential as a complete hockey player, why isn't he someone who's considered to be part of this rebuilding process?
You know, I think the jury's still out, and I think it's a good question as to what happens with Nazem Kadri, and it's going to be one that's going to get evaluated probably on a week-to-week, if not day-to-day basis here in Toronto. And I don't know if Mike Babcock or even the management team has figured out what they have in him. Like, is he a guy that is a legitimate number two center on a good team, or is he maybe sliding as a number three or is one of those guys that's a tweener? And I don't think the Leafs know exactly if he can be a 200-foot player, a guy that you can have take defensive zone face-offs and put out there against the best lines, or if you just got a guy that you really don't trust in all situations. So it's basically up to Kadri. I know Babcock is really pulling for this guy just because of what you mentioned. He's got age, he's got potential, and I don't think we've realized or seen the best that we've seen out of him. So it's going to be a really interesting case study as we get closer to them, closer to the deadline, as to what they do with him, because he's on an expiring contract. And again, his age makes him very, very valuable on the open market, I believe.
And Michael, coming into the season, you look at the Leafs roster, and we all know it's not very good. But one player that I thought might be a real good fit under Mike Babcock was Morgan Rielly. Has the talent, certainly young enough and can grow enough. How has he played thus far under Babcock? And I guess the second part to that question is, who do you think is Babcock's favorite player thus far?
Yeah, you know what? That's another interesting question, because I think of all the guys on the Leafs, I think Babcock has really had the biggest impact on Rielly so far. And I love the kid in terms of his potential and what he can do already at this stage in his career. I think when you look at the World Cup under 23 roster there, I think Morgan Rielly is in your top four defense pairs by next year. Last night he was used in a shutdown role, really matched up against Sagan and Ben all night, and didn't look out of place. He leads the team in points right now. I really do think it's one of those cases where you go, the sky's the limit with Rielly, because he can skate as good as anyone in the league. He's got tremendous size. I think it's almost deceiving how thick and stocky he is. If he can just become that more all-around defenseman, and when you talk to him, that's his goal. Yeah, he wants to be the next Duncan Keith, and he's definitely putting the work in when you talk to guys who train him and work with him in the summer. So to answer your second question, what was it? Who's Babcock's favorite guy right now?
Yeah.
Babcock mentioned Dion Phaneuf, but I think that was a case of him just trying to pump tires. I'd be surprised if Babcock's not secretly saying that he's got a man crush on Rielly right now, and how can you not? Because when you look at that roster, I think everyone on Toronto's roster is really expendable, and Kadri included, but the one guy you have to stop at and say, okay, here's a cornerstone for the future, it's Morgan.
Michael, we'll let you go on this last question. You're obviously talking to us, and we're here in Winnipeg. I want to ask you about a Manitoba boy getting his first taste of NHL action. That's Byron Freeze. He's got into his first five games of his NHL career after a circuitous route to get to this point. How has he looked for the Maple Leafs through his first five games?
Yeah, what a story. ECHL a year ago, the NHL at the end of last year, to right now picking up his first assist in the NHL.
It looks like we actually, Michael, you're cutting in and out on us there, unfortunately.
Okay, sorry guys.
Well, there you go. Hang on, it's better now.
Now you sound good, okay, Michael.
Yeah. I love stories like that where a guy can go from the ECHL to the AHL to the NHL in one short year, and I don't know what Fraser's long-term potential is. But right now, it's great motivation, I think, for any kid that's playing and on the cusp of maybe quitting his NHL career. How can you not root for this guy?
Yeah, it's for as bad as the Leafs are going to be this year, at least there's some good stories for some people out as a result.
Winkler's a hockey factory.
Michael Tracos covers the Toronto Maple Leafs and the NHL for the National Post. He's a frequent guest on this program. Michael, appreciate your time this evening. Enjoy the contest tomorrow night.
All right, thanks, boys, and always.
It's always our pleasure, Michael. Thanks again. It's head to break. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Ten minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to NHL This Week. This segment of the program brought to you by Zappia Group Realty, official realtor of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100.
We had a great lunch with the Zappias today.
We did. It was a fantastic lunch.
Yeah, we frequently eat with the Zappias because they know that we love to eat as well.
And then Drew took the leftovers, not you.
Yeah, I was supposed to take the leftovers, but you know, shout out to the Zappias.
In my defense, you just left the leftovers and completely forgot about them, so I wasn't going to let very good food go to waste.
You know, I got to be honest. I'm the type of guy that will always jump on the leftovers. Like, I have no shame. I will take those leftovers. I don't even care if I ate.
You could have just said I have no shame, and that would have been sufficient.
But I have been eating so poorly lately with Halloween. I don't know what it is, but when I have leftover Halloween chips and candy, like,
you're not alone there.
I mean, I had 10 Kit Kat bars for breakfast yesterday. It was ridiculous.
I don't know if that's sarcasm or not.
I'm like exaggerating a little bit.
I think it was probably close to like 6.
But you know what I mean. You have this candy around, and I just have zero discipline. Like, I am the weakest person. So you have all that stuff around me, and I just, it's ridiculous. But shout out to the Zappias, great lunch, and again, our top sponsor right now.
Because we had lunch with them most recently. That's pretty much the barometer right there. Anyways, let's talk about the Dustin Byfuglien lack of suspension from the game against Montreal earlier this weekend.
And you know, I have no intention to try hit him. I'm trying to go up ice on a delay call, and I get the shit end of it. I honestly didn't even think about it because the game was going. I didn't really know what was even really going on. Hockey's a fast game and things move fast and things happen.
So you surprised there was no suspension handed down to Dustin Byfuglien?
No, I want to get in here first, Richie, because I thought it was absolutely. I didn't even think he should get a penalty on the play. We all watched the game live, and if you were watching that play, or if you've seen the replay, mm-hmm. Brendan Gallagher is about to go off for a high-sticking penalty, and the whistle goes, and Buff kind of meets him at the blue line, and Buff has, 6-7 inches on Brendan Gallagher? By the way, you guys know, if you've listened to the show, for those out there, you'll know that I'm a huge Brendan Gallagher fan. He's a little ball of hate. He's an excellent hockey player. So it's not that I'm not a big Brendan Gallagher fan. But that play was not even a hit to the head, really. I mean, he's finishing his check, and the way Brendan Gallagher falls, I think, makes the play look a lot worse, Richie. So I didn't even think there should be a penalty, and I think Buff is getting picked on here. I don't think that this should have been a situation where a hearing was needed. I mean, it was a nothing. It was just a guy finishing a check, and I think because it's Buff and he was suspended last year for that hit on JT Miller, that deserved to be suspended. I mean, that was a cross-check to the back. We all remember that. But to me, this was a nothing. I mean, why was this reviewed?
I agree. I thought it was a clean hit. His shoulder was tucked. Even if with the height difference, it didn't hit him in the head, as far as I'm concerned. He went through the body. If he gets a little bit ahead at the end of the day.
Like, Rich, are we trying to take body checking out of hockey?
That's the whole point for me. I mean, this is a good hit. This is a guy who's comes in, it's a clean check, he's way bigger than him, he's going to bounce off him, and I realize that just because Gallagher gets up right away doesn't mean that he's not hurt or has a concussion, never may be, but it's a better sign than if he doesn't get up.
But you just mentioned it, he got right up and went after Buff. Mm-hmm. I mean, he wasn't hurt.
Well, doesn't it, I mean...
Gallagher's a tough little player, he's a good player, Drew.
From my perspective, though, it's not like Gallagher had the puck even. Byfuglien beat him to the puck.
The thing
and,
is,
and then
is
Gallagher bounces off
there's,
of him.
It was a clean hit.
There's camera angles, 400 camera angles, and there's a bunch of different, you know, there's going to be these, is it GIF or JIF on the Twitter, and you're going to have all this stuff people are going to overanalyze. Let me tell you something. You're going to watch the hit 300 times, and maybe on the 297 say, oh, you know what, there might be a little bit of head contact. I mean, this happens in real time. Never mind the referees. The players have to go play a physical game and make sure they tuck their shoulder in. I mean, that's hard. But and even with Mark Stone, Mark Stone follows through. I don't really think Mark Stone's direct. Like, I don't think Mark Stone was trying to put his arm up to hit. Was it Glenn Denning, whoever it was in Detroit? I don't think that's the intention.
Landon Ferraro.
I don't think that's the intention. I mean, you're trying to hit the guy, you're going to follow through a bit up. I mean, that's just the way it goes. I'm not certainly advocating for headshots. I don't think Stone's was worse than Byfuglien's. I don't think Byfuglien's even needed a call. I thought that's a regular play as far as I'm concerned.
Here's the NHL Department of Player Safety's explanation about why they chose not to discipline Dustin Byfuglien.
That while there is some head contact on this play, this is a collision where the head is not the main point of contact. It is important to note that while Byfuglien is a repeat offender under the collective bargaining agreement, that history only comes into play once it has been determined that supplemental discipline is necessary. The hit itself is evaluated on its own merits, not on the player delivering the check. Here, the Department of Player Safety has determined that this hit does not rise to the level of supplemental discipline.
I think what you're seeing here...
Is that Patrick Burke's voice?
I'm not sure.
I'm pretty sure that
video.
Was the George Casanza tape for about risk management.
Well, I don't think that was Stefan Quintel.
I didn't see that. I didn't see who did the video, but
okay.
The, you know, it's interesting. I was looking back.
The thing about risk management is...
in preparing for the show... You know, you look back, you know, there was some video from I guess, either Sunday's That's Hockey or Monday's That's Hockey. And you have the TSN panelists all saying that this is a suspendable offense. So I think what you see here is that at this point in time, nobody knows what's a suspendable offense and what's not a suspendable
offense. I think a lot of
offense.
People thought Byfuglien was going to get at least one game because there was a hearing and because he has a previous history. And even though they look at each incident case by case, they do factor in how many previous suspensions or fines you've had. So if Alexander Burmistrov gets into a situation later on the year, hopefully he doesn't, where he gets his elbow up or something like that, Richie, on a player, he was fined earlier this year for elbowing, so they'll factor that in. But I think this is a case, and you know, you could say that I'm being a little bit Homer, and I mean, you can tweet at a legal curve or send me a tweet, and again, this is we're encouraging healthy dialogue here. But to me, I mean, this is the NHL here. I mean, there's body checking in the NHL. And when you have a guy like Buff, and I'm not saying that Brendan Gallagher is at fault here. I'm just saying that this wasn't even a direct hit to the head, shoulder to head. I mean, this is a situation. It's a smaller player against a bigger player. Pretty simple. I mean, if you have Gionta going up against Chara, or if you have Nick Petan going up against Svedberg on Chicago, mm-hmm. I mean, stuff like this can happen. And I think what's being overlooked here is that Gallagher wasn't hurt at all on the play. So I don't know why it was ever reviewed. I really, for me, I'm dumbfounded as to why this ever got to the NHL Department of Player Safety.
I understand they're trying to protect the heads, and I'm okay with that. But I think you have to also understand that not so much Gallagher's, maybe more in Ferraro's, but there's a lot of players now who skate up the middle, head down. I mean, that was a no-no years and years ago.
Sure.
Now, I'm not advocating for those guys to get blasted, but if Mike Richards' hit on David Booth was today, he'd get 3 years. And those kind of hits, he should get 3 years. Those are the hits that are the problem. These are regular body checks. These aren't elbows out to the head, you know, with a guy late on a play. These are hockey plays as far as I'm concerned. There's going to be some ramifications. There's going to be some injuries. And so be it. I mean, again, you got to protect the head, but also let the guys play. I mean, hockey is a physical sport.
I thought Byfuglien's hit last week on Pominville was worse than this hit on Gallagher.
Are you thinking of Bomeister?
No, I'm not thinking about Bomeister. I'm thinking about Pominville when he took Pominville into the boards against Minnesota late in that game where he took the penalty, I think. Yeah.
I agree.
And I thought that was more malicious.
I would agree with that.
And I thought it was more malicious, and I think, you know, obviously, the game is played at a very fast rate. It's much slower on the ice for a guy like Dustin Byfuglien, who's got great hockey sense. I think he sees the game a lot slower than you know, a lot of other players. So when I see what he does to Pominville unnecessarily, I think there's a lot more malice there than there is yesterday, where it's a loose puck that he wins the puck battle for, and this, you know, Brandon Gallagher comes in and bounces off of him.
National TV, mm-hmm. The Habs are a beloved team.
That's why he got 4 games for cross-checking JT Miller.
Well, that's
because Larry Brooks was up on his soapbox about it.
To
some extent.
Maybe the 4 games.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe the 4 games. Any games, no. I mean, that was a bad cross-check.
Yes, but 4 games I thought was excessive.
I wouldn't be surprised if Mark Bergevin was, you know, talking to the NHL.
Oh, they always call.
And
you know,
saying,
that.
Well, you guys should probably look at that hit.
Well, and also, I'm the Montreal Canadiens, and this is the Winnipeg Jets. There is, you know, I know it's a bit of an inferiority complex, but I think they certainly do protect their bigger markets that have more of an influence and are going to rattle some cages more than, you know, the team in Winnipeg or a team in Ottawa will.
They didn't suspend him here.
I know.
Suspend him.
And that's,
and using
I'm
that rationale
about
Montreal,
that.
Then they would have given him something because they did it to New York. I don't know if I'm down with that, Drew. I think they're still pretty objective. I just think, and I again, I'm saying I don't mind that they're protecting the head, but at some point you also have to understand how tight, like,
How bang bang it is,
and you're never going to have hitting anymore. If that's what you want, then just legislate hitting out of the game.
Right, and I just want to be clear here because I don't want people to think that I'm a barbarian, because I'm not. I mean, I love body checking.
We saw what you ate at lunch today.
I love body checking in hockey. I'm a proponent of fighting in hockey. I'll admit that. I've said that over the last 6 years since we've started the show. I think fighting does have a place in the game because I think it reduces the stick incidents that you see, and I think you're not going to see players take liberties with other players, for example, when Anthony Peluso and Chris Thorburn are on the ice. It's been a part of hockey for many years, and it continues to be a part of hockey. We saw Peluso fight with Jared Bohl on Saturday night. But I don't think you can start looking at every single hit, and especially when it's not that malicious or there's not an intent to injure, and you can start to say that this is every single time this happens, you have to review it. I mean, I'm all for the NHL Department of Player Safety, the NHL, the NHLPA taking concussions seriously. I'm serious, and we've talked about concussions on the show, Drew, a lot. So that's not what it's about. I'm just talking about if it's a clean body check, it's a clean body check, and that's part of hockey. Mark Stewart stood up Jonathan Toews at the blue line at the MTS Center, and everybody was cheering, and that was a great hockey play because it prevented Jonathan Toews from entering the zone and doing what he does. So body checking is a part of the game. When it's done properly, it shouldn't be criticized or reviewed.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the quality of the play on ice so far in this season of the NHL. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. One hour down, 1 hour to go. The second hour of NHL This Week here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by our friends at Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and the home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook at bernsteinsdeli.com. Bernstein's, of course, open Monday to Friday until 7:30 p.m. now and fully licensed, so you can get a cold brewski, as he says in the new commercial, at Bernstein's Deli while you're washing it down with your Illegal Curve sandwich.
Well, tell me this much. Yeah. What sounds better to you than a corned beef sandwich or an Illegal Curve sandwich paired with a nice local beer, a nice half pints, a nice Fort Garry? I mean, sounds pretty
delightful.
Darn good to me.
Sounds like breakfast for you.
Yeah, there's some truth to what Richard said.
I only eat
well.
Oranges and kale in the morning.
Except for the last segment where you said you had 10 Kit Kats for breakfast. But aside from that,
that's because it's post-Halloween.
What's your excuse the other 11 months a year?
Moving along.
Yeah, moving along. Score update from around the NHL. At the end of the first period in Boston, the Bruins have a 2-1 lead on the Dallas Stars. Tyler Seguin, of course, making his return to Boston, but he's played there since the trade. But I'm sure there's always some emotion in the building. Seguin on the board first, getting his sixth of the year. Colin Miller and Louis Erickson respond for the Bruins. So the trade's working out for everybody right now.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. In Brooklyn, the Islanders with a 1-0 lead on the Devils. Brock Nelson with his third of the year. In Madison Square Garden, a nice rivalry matchup between the Capitals and the Rangers. Ovechkin on the board for the Caps, but they trail 2-1. Oscar Lindberg with his sixth and Kevin Hayes with his third of the year.
Yeah, and on that topic, I think that's number 481 for Ovechkin.
Getting
that,
closer.
That debate that we had on Saturday, a couple of people at work brought that up. A lot of people are actually siding with Richie that they don't think that it's necessarily a guarantee that Ovechkin gets to 700 goals. I think by the time his career is over, he's well over 700. But I think it was awesome that that got a lot of debate going amongst hockey fans out
yeah,
there.
Yeah, and 5 years from now, we'll be able to know whether or not we were correct or incorrect. So I'm siding with you on this one, Ezzy. Scoreless in Montreal between the Sens and the Habs, and scoreless as well between the Lightning and the Red Wings, a rematch of last year's first-round playoff matchup at Joe Louis Arena. Still to come tonight, Los Angeles at St. Louis, Calgary at Colorado in the battle of two struggling teams, Philly at Edmonton, and the Blue Jackets in San Jose for the nightcap on a busy Tuesday night in the NHL. Speaking of the NHL in general, so far, you know, last year we were talking about the quality on the ice, you know, not being great last year. We sort of thought it was a relatively middling year. Sort of the numbers we thought bore that out when you look at the scoring leaders and everything else. Thus far, 1 month into the season, do you find any difference? You know, what are your thoughts been on the play so far 1 month into the 2015-16 NHL season?
Yeah, and it's a really good question. And I think the play early on has been better. And I think last year there were a few reasons, major reasons, why scoring was down and why generally the play was a little bit of a letdown. I don't think the playoffs were a letdown. I think the Stanley Cup Finals, even though maybe you'd like to see more goals, Richie, I think coming off of the Olympic year hurt a lot of teams. After the 2014 Olympics, teams like the Blackhawks even, who got off to a slow start but eventually won the Stanley Cup, but especially the LA Kings and other teams, Colorado Avalanche were another team that after winning the division, they had a stinker of a year last year. I think coming off of the Olympic year, what really was a detriment to the NHL, and I think you started the season off to a slow start. And I think last year you had kind of an abnormal year for injuries as well. And you had, Patrick Kane is one of the players that was leading the league in points. He probably would have finished with 90, 95 points last year if he doesn't go down with an injury. And then, of course, he comes back in the playoffs. But I think that when you look at the state of the NHL right now, guys, I think it's in a situation where you have unbelievable, unparalleled parity, really. I know that's a lot of P-sounding words there, but I think, you know, you want to have a lot of rivalries. You want to have a lot of good teams. You have that right now. And I think we talked about it on Saturday. When you look at some of the teams that were bottom dwellers last year, whether it's the Coyotes, the Sabres, the Oilers, all of those teams have gotten better because the 2015 draft was so strong. I mean, Kyle Connor going to the Jets at 17 is amazing. And it was wrote about in the hockey news this week about how, you know, Kyle Connor, many thought, should have gone top 10. So that was a strong draft with McDavid and Eichel and Hanifin and Marner and Dylan Strome. We all know all the good players that were in the draft. It might be better than the 2003 draft, which is considered one of the best drafts of the last 20 years. So the state of the NHL right now, I think, and the game as a whole, Rich, the international game, and I know we're going to talk about the World Cup of Hockey later, but when you look at especially...
I don't want to get
Richie going yet.
World Cup of money.
I think, to me...
Have you trademarked that slogan, by the way?
One of the things that I've loved the most, I mean, I'm a proud Canadian, but my second favorite country is that country below us. And we go down there quite often. I was just down there less than a month ago watching UND.
Guatemala? I had no idea you were so fond of Guatemala.
The growth of the game in the U.S., I think we're still seeing the benefits. Maybe the benefits is the wrong word, Rich. We're starting to see, I guess, the fruits of Wayne Gretzky going to L.A. 20 years ago, 25 years ago. You're starting to see players develop from California, Arizona, Texas. Auston Matthews is the first homegrown talent to come from Arizona, and that just wouldn't have happened 20 years ago. So the growth of the game in the U.S., I think, is phenomenal.
The irony is going to be when he makes NHL and they're gone.
Exactly.
But I don't think they're going anywhere. I think with the new arena that sounds like it's going to come to fruition in a better location, somewhere closer to Scottsdale as opposed to Glendale.
How many more arenas do we need to ensure this team?
Well, obviously one more arena. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean,
more taxpayer money. Anyhow, let's get back onto the topic.
Yeah. Coyotes are banned as a conversation.
Well, we can talk about them on the ice. So let's talk about the quality of play. I think the quality of play is fine. I think it's interesting to note that the cap makes the quality of play, in my mind, far worse. I think it's fine in terms of last year versus this year. I mean, I don't think it's great. I don't think it's awful, but I don't think it's awful. But the cap hurts quality, I think, because the veterans get squeezed, and I think they're better hockey players than the young guys who are forced into situations because of their cheap contracts. So they go over to Europe and get paid within their right completely. The quality of play, I think, is hurt a little bit. I mean, I know we're not going to see Colorado Avalanche teams of Sakic, Forsberg, Blake, Bork, Foote. You're not going to see teams like that. I mean, the Blackhawks are the closest thing to that. Tampa's trying to do that, and Stamkos might be leaving, and you're not going to see that really anymore. So the quality of play is not going to be at that top-end level between two dynamite teams. It just isn't going to be that way. Detroit and Colorado, Dallas, like those three. You don't have talent like Nieuwendijk, Medano. You don't have talent like that anymore on the same team. So I don't think the quality is ever going to be at that level with the cap. Collectively, the game is very fast. It's certainly faster than it was before, and it's overcoached.
Well, you mentioned overcoaching, and I mean, 3-on-3, which has been this fabulous development through the first month of the season, you can already see that it's getting overcoached and the fun is being removed from it. I think I mentioned this on Saturday's show. I watched Ottawa-Calgary play 3-on-3 last week, and it was terrible. It was awful hockey. It wasn't hockey. It was 3-on-3 where nobody really tried to score as much as they tried to just dipsy-doodle on the outside, hoping that one of the players would, make an unnecessary risk, and then they would be in a position to score. Right. The coaches have already sucked the life out of it.
Well, on the other hand, you see Winnipeg versus Tampa a couple of weeks ago was a very entertaining game. But, Drew, the point that you just made is well taken, because as the season progresses and the points get more and more valuable and tough to get, you're going to see coaches try to play for the shootout, I think. Even though you saw that last year, I think you're going to see it less. You're going to see less games go to the shootout. But, well, the shootout is another topic. I think the shootout should be removed completely. But I think, Richie, your point is a good one, in that you don't have all-star teams anymore. You don't have five or six elite teams that are clearly above the rest of the teams. You have a few teams that you could say are better than the rest of the pack. You could say, I mean, whatever word you want to use, if you want to call the Tampa Bay Lightning, the Montreal Canadiens, the Hawks, the Blues, a few other teams, if you want to call those elite teams, the definition of elite has changed. Because Richie's, hearkening to the days of the Detroit Red Wings in the mid-90s.
Juggernauts.
The Colorado Avalanche, or even the Devils. I know people don't want to consider them a dynasty, but they did win three Stanley Cups. Yeah.
They did it in a manner that isn't appealing, effective.
In this day and age, if you had Niedermeyer, Stevens, Brodeur, you wouldn't be able to afford Eliash, Sikora, and Arnett.
That's right.
You wouldn't. You just wouldn't be able to.
Yep.
I'm losing our young listeners there. But I mean, that's the truth.
Yeah, well, that's what the NHL wants. That's why the NFL, the fact that the Patriots have been able to do what they've been able to do with their dynasty, that wasn't supposed to be able to happen anymore.
And aside from that team, it really doesn't. I mean, there's not Matt. The NFL, take out the gambling. Sure. How appealing is it?
It's not.
The quality.
Take away fantasy football. You're right. And everything that they've done is they've turned it into.
So give hockey credit in the sense that they don't rely on gambling or the fan base as much as, I know, I'm sure DraftKings and whatever the other one's called help. But the idea is the game succeeds on the hardcore fan being actually interested in rooting for his team. I'm not saying that the NFL doesn't have that, but you know what I mean.
The reason the NFL is popular has way more to do with alcohol and gambling than it does with the product on the field.
And the reason you're popular has a lot to do with alcohol, just not gambling.
Yeah, I love the NFL, but the truth is people love the NFL because they go and sit in a parking lot for 4 hours
and
drink ahead
of
time.
You can also watch it all in one day.
That's right. It's much less of a commitment than the other sports, which are 82 nights a year and then playoffs
and then everything else. And I know that is not going to happen likely ever, but baseball and then you have NBA with the luxury taxes and both do allow for these great teams. And I know we get back to when you had great teams, you didn't want the same team winning all the time. So I understand that. But I'm just saying the state of the game now, speed is very good. Everybody can skate. I don't think they can think the game any better than before. It might even be less because the faster skaters are beating out the slower guys who can probably think more better than the faster guys can. But if you can close a gap and listen to the coach, you can get a job.
Speed
and goaltending is way better.
Speed's more important than brains. The goaltending is better. You look at goals that were scored in the 1980s, It's amazing that every shot didn't go in the back of
the net. Yeah, I mean, sure, Drew, it sounds, people always say that, but that always bothers me. I mean, if you played hockey in the 1980s, what I mean, our parents did, or, you know, older friends of ours did, it wasn't like that. Like, I mean,
wait, but you watch,
Drew, your heavy wooden stick and heavy skates and stuff didn't exactly allow for that, and you couldn't fire the puck as quickly.
Yeah,
and
like, well, the equipment is the difference.
Yeah, so in 20 years, they're going to say this game is slow.
Well, I didn't say anything about slow. I mean, it's amazing. I'm just saying it's not that, you know, when you watch highlights from the 1980s, a lot of the shots that went in,
sure,
you know, and it's a function of the equipment and more than it is than the skill of the people involved. Everybody was smaller.
Well, and you didn't have kids playing hockey 12 months a year,
absolutely,
3 hours a day because their parents want them to.
That's right. There was none of the obsessiveness,
right,
less of the obsessiveness than you see today. But, I mean, it looks completely different. It's amazing to watch, like, old highlights, and you think you're looking at the 1920s.
And I think, you know, if I'm understanding Richie correctly, and I know he shares the same philosophy on hockey, you know, you watch that documentary about Central Red Army in the late 80s, early 90s. Those teams dominated other teams, mm-hmm, because of the way they played as a five-man unit. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're talking Krutov, Makarov, I mean, Larionov. That's, you know, that's, if you've seen the documentary, that's what we're talking about. It's a kind of an imperfect world that we have now, where we have a lot of parity in the NHL, but a lot of teams and the types of games that you see. Sure, you see a lot of games, Jets and Lightning back and forth. You love that type of game. But then you see the Jets and Kings. It's a little bit of a slower game. It's not as pleasing to the eye.
Like the Jets-Blue Jackets. I mean, the Blue Jackets are awful. Yeah. But, I mean, Ezzy, I think to your point about the Central Red Army, it's a good one because those teams also practice together all the time. And if you get NHL teams don't practice very much.
Sure. They play too many games, and there's not enough time to actually practice.
Simon, they always play the same amount of games, Drew. They just practice less because there's the wear and tear on the body and you're practicing situations in a game, right?
Yeah. And it's what's most effective, right? I think most coaches in the NHL and other levels of pro hockey know that if you get a few goals, two or three goals, whatever it is, and you shut the game down, that's going to be easier to do, more effective to do, as opposed to winning a lot of those games by trading chances back and forth. But the question then becomes, well, once you get to a playoff situation, is that going to work? Is the St. Louis Blues style going to work when you get up against a team that can shut you down just as good as you can shut them down? Minnesota Wild, great example, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that the Minnesota Wild are perfectly suited to beat a team like the St. Louis Blues because I think they can beat them at their game. So it's the type of style. What's going to be the most effective in winning? And I think you're starting to see, as players get more and more skilled and fast, and you start to see less enforcers and quote-unquote kind of grinders in the game, there's always going to be a place for that, especially in the North American game. I think you're going to see coaches having to use that type of mentality where you're going to have to go quick strike offense first, not always think defense first, which I think has been kind of the style over the last 20 years because it's been effective and you can win Stanley Cups by playing that kind of style.
But I think at the point at the beginning of the segment, now we have to go to break here, Drew,
is
the cap will keep your team from being dominant, but it also keeps the bottom level from being as good because you need to rely on the cheap talent that might not be ready just yet. Now, some of these guys are ready for sure, like in Ehlers, but may not be ready just yet to take the jobs of guys who are ready, who are going to get paid too much money.
Yeah. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the tax impact on NHL free agency. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Tuesday evening, November the 3rd, you're listening to NHL This Week. Reminder, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 12 noon, this coming Saturday afternoon. Ezzy and I will be with you to get you set for the Jets and the Flyers taking place later on Saturday at MTS Center. We get rid of the dead weight known as Richard Pollock on Saturday show, so that's to our advantage there, Ezzy.
Yeah, well, Richie's going to be at the Vikings game, which should be an amazing game. Vikings versus Rams.
Old AP versus new AP in Viking Adrian, the real Adrian Peterson against Todd Gurley, who's doing a fantastic impersonation of what Adrian Peterson was or is. So that should be an entertaining contest. Both teams with playoff aspirations, the Vikings especially, but the Rams have sort of been sneaking up there in the NFC. I know. Yes, it's become a football show.
Is that James Brown over there?
Yeah, that's me in a nutshell. Anyways, let's talk about an interesting article in the Ottawa Citizen from earlier this past week or 2 weeks ago. I'm not 100% sure. With
you know, they do date stamp these articles.
I know. I forgot to look at it. That's what I'm saying. I'm opening it up right now. It didn't open. That was from last week, October 29th. With the new change in government in Canada, one of the promises made by our Prime Minister-elect, Justin Trudeau, is that there's going to be a new tax on people making over $200,000 per year. Currently, they're taxed at 29% on the federal tax rate. It's going to move it up to 33%.
Looks like Richie's going to have to put a little more money away.
But it's certainly going to affect NHL players. You know, $200,000 is what they call spending money, I believe, in the course of a couple
of weeks.
Yeah,
that's a weekend for me.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, do you expect at all that this is going to affect NHL free agency for especially the Canadian teams? You know, the Montreal Canadiens have long been known as sort of a bad team to play for based on their tax, the effect of the taxes, both provincial and municipal and, you know, federal now in Quebec and Ontario. The Leafs and the Senators aren't too far behind. Do you think that this is going to come into effect at all as players begin to make their decisions regarding where they're going to sign as free agents?
Well, I think it'll be a factor, Drew. I think all these teams put together these packages to enhance how appealing it is to play in a market. And let's be honest, if you're a team in a southern U.S. market or a U.S. market with less taxes, you're going to say, here are taxes. And if you're marketing, you're going to say, here are taxes and here's the competition's taxes. Here's the difference that you save per year. I'm assuming they do it.
There's
the article quotes an agent stating that.
Right.
And that's going to be a factor. I mean, maybe it's not the make or break. If it's between two places, I won't go there because of the taxes. But if it's between 10 places and it gets you disqualified, that's a factor. So I think it's something that we can't just overlook.
The article quotes Rand Simon of Newport Sports Management. I believe Newport Sports, that's Donnie Meehan's group?
I believe so.
Yeah. So he quotes him, and he talks about, you know, this past summer when Jeff Petrie, longtime Edmonton Oiler, decided to sign with the Montreal Canadiens when he was a free agent. And the quote is, there was no issue on the hockey side, but during the conversations, we had to point out that there's a big financial difference going from Alberta to Quebec. Alberta, of course, had, I'm pretty sure they don't have any provincial tax. I'm not 100% sure when it comes to income there, but certainly Quebec is a lot higher than Alberta. So this is an agent admitting that when they put, you know, they put offers side by side for players, this is a factor that they put into a play.
Well, I mean, how can you not, right? So how does this affect? Does this change things? Well, it's going to change things, I think, in terms of how appealing these Canadian markets are for free agents. And I think we'll be seeing whether or not it's going to be a make or break thing. But it's a disadvantage.
The article continues to talks about New York City. Quoting from the article, New York City is notoriously expensive for athletes because of combined federal, state, and municipal tax rates, especially for players living in Manhattan. But American cities offer a further advantage because U.S. resident players can claim more deductions, such as their agent fees, property taxes, and interest on their mortgages. So these are all, you know, the differences in the taxes between the, you know, a lot of the U.S. states and the Canadian provinces.
I had a chuckle when I was reading this article and saw that it says New York City is notoriously expensive for athletes because of, as you mentioned, the combined taxes. It's also expensive because it's the most expensive city in North America.
Yeah.
It's the most expensive city for house prices, for rent, for anything. So, I mean, I know what his point was, that you have to pay three different types of taxes, but Manhattan is, as we know, is one of the most beautiful places in the world. So it's expensive there because major cities like that that have 10 plus million people are going to be expensive. But look at Drew, to answer your question, I think this will have an impact, the higher income earners having to pay more taxes. And as far as players potentially choosing between an American city and a Canadian city, I don't think it's going to affect, you know, Winnipeg over Calgary or Calgary over Montreal. The provincial taxes have a little bit to do with it, Richie, but when you're talking about tens of thousands of dollars.
Well, yeah, I mean, the Canadian teams are in the same situation here because of the fact that it's a federal tax. But, I mean, the point, Ezzy, I think is, well, I think this is a big issue. On a one-year deal, I'm not sure how big of a difference it makes to a player. On a seven-year deal, because if you're signing another team's player, or 8-year deal, I think that's where you see it. That's where that number gets big.
Sure, where the cumulative effect of all those taxes being paid really begins to add up.
Right, and you know, Richie mentioned this earlier, but for Jeff Petrie, he had some other offers. We don't know how many exactly, but
no, but he signed before July 1, didn't he?
It's true, he did.
Well, that's right. Yeah.
So he would have had offers come July 1
before the trade deadline. Yeah.
So obviously the taxes for him, while he was made aware of it by his agents, as you would expect they would.
For sure.
It wasn't a he saw whatever he saw in Montreal as so appealing.
Right.
He didn't care about the extra taxes and just wanted to make the deal with the Canadiens.
But you know, just using any player as an example, Jeff Petrie, if he has a lot of offers, I think, Rich, then it comes into play more so. Because then he knows that if he rejects Calgary's offer, or in this case Montreal's offer, then he can go to New York or he can go to L.A. or something like that. But if you're someone who wasn't getting a lot of offers, who had to retire, Curtis Glencross, for example, are you going to not play for a Canadian city when you know that there aren't offers?
Exactly.
Sure, you might have to pay $40,000 or $50,000 more in taxes. I don't know, whatever
but
it is.
You're right, but it's better than nothing, of course.
Right, so I think this is something that it's interesting to bring up because, you know, the Liberals came into power and they won the majority government, and this is one of their policies. I mean, we live in Canada. I mean, we get taxed fairly high. We don't get taxed as high as, you know, Sweden, for example. Mm-hmm. Not to say that that's a bad thing. I'm just saying, I mean, this factors into it. And I think, you know, the discussion comes back to, how much do players want to play in Toronto and Montreal? How much can they handle the pressure? How much does climate factor in? Because Toronto and Montreal, even though they're bigger cities than Winnipeg, sure. I mean, they still have cold winters.
Yeah, well,
they're great cities, don't get me wrong. But, I mean, is Vancouver going to face that? Because Vancouver is nicer and it's got the ocean and all that. I mean, I don't know. I think this is going to have an impact on players deciding to play in Canada. But I don't think it's going to have a large impact that we're going to see that's maybe noticeable or you know, palpable. Yeah.
The best part of the best quote in the article, and I'll read this before we head to break. Some players on Canadian teams will attempt to maintain legal residency by spending at least half the year in the United States, but game and practice schedules can make that difficult. For NHL players considering playing in Toronto,
playoff schedules.
Establishing U.S. residency can be easier because the Leafs tend to not make the playoffs, allowing players to get back to the U.S. in April. U.S. residency is harder to maintain for players with the Canadiens, whose season is more likely to be extended by the playoffs. You're listening to NHL This Week. When we come back, we talk about Mike Babcock, head coach of the Canadian World Cup entry. It's 7:30 in the evening on Tuesday, the 3rd of November. You're listening to NHL This Week. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Sitting next to me is Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Rory's doing the fabulous job getting us on and off the air. This segment brought to you by our friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. A big comedian announcement coming up tomorrow at 3 p.m.
Who is it?
I don't know. It's going to, they're going to announce it tomorrow at 3 p.m. You're going to have to follow them on Twitter, at Rumors Comedy.
I know you have the inside scoop.
I do not know who the big comedian announcement is going to be, but check it out. Get ready for it. It's going to be big tomorrow. Rumors Comedy Club, another great comedy announcement. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com.
I like comedy.
Yes, then comedy likes you too there, Ezzy.
You've done stand-up before, Ezzy.
Yep, I did a bit of it sitting down because I got tired, but yep, I did a little stand-up.
the Cree-Com Comedy Night is coming up at Rumors, I think, one of these in the next couple weeks.
Yep.
So there you go, you can check that
out. I'll be there. I'm a proud Cree-Com alumni.
Uh-huh. I got to say, you know, for a proud Cree-Com alumni, I drive around. I see Joel Marcoux on a bus bench. I see Darren Bombing on a bus bench. I don't see any Ezzy on a bus bench.
Well, you don't need to see me on a bus bench.
Well, I do. I see you passed out on a bus bench.
I was waiting for that.
You walked right into that one.
That was an easy one.
That was good. That was pretty good. It wasn't great, but it was pretty good.
Mike Babcock.
The question is, can you see Darren or Joel behind Ezzy when Ezzy's passed out on that bus bench?
Those guys deserve to be on the bus benches more than I do.
Mike Babcock named going to be named officially tomorrow the head coach of Team Canada at the upcoming World Cup of Hockey. I mean, you can't really argue with the decision. Are you surprised that he's back for another kick at the can?
I think Mike Babcock is the best coach in the NHL. This doesn't feel right. And I know I'm anti-World Cup, and I'm not going to watch it, and I can't stand the World Cup. Maybe I'll watch it, but I can't stand the World Cup. But something about this just doesn't feel right.
It seems like it should be, you won your two golds. It seems like it should be time for you know, not, fresh blood to come in there.
It's not even so much that for me as it's just, maybe it's the Leafs thing and the overexposure and going to be on a losing team and maybe lose a bit of your cachet about always winning and making the playoffs. I don't know. Maybe I'm overthinking. I just, something about this doesn't feel right.
And I can understand that, Rich. Look at Doug Armstrong is the GM of this World Cup team. So it's not Steve Yzerman, mm-hmm. right? And you have Mike Babcock. You mentioned, Drew, that how could you really argue with the track record? Gold at the 2010 Olympics.
No question.
Gold at the 2014 Olympics. Why wouldn't Mike Babcock be a coach? And I know Gary had the article up on TSN.ca about that Joel Quenneville, you know, deserves to be the head coach of Team Canada. I don't disagree with Gary. I think Joel Quenneville is a very underrated coach. I mean, we know he's a good coach, but I think he's kind of losing a bit of the spotlight because of Mike Babcock's success, especially mm-hmm. at the international level. But when you talk about the NHL level, I think in the last five, six, 7 years, it's really Quenneville, Daryl Sutter, Claude Julien, who's obviously going to be an assistant coach. I think that this Canadian team will be a favorite regardless of who the head coach is. And really, they're all going to have an impact. Joel Quenneville is going to be an assistant. Claude Julien will do a great job as an assistant. These guys have international experience as well.
Is there any pro, if you're Mike Babcock, what can you get out of?
You win. You're here to challenge. You want to win. And you're going to be coaching a terrible team. Well, you know, Drew, I don't think you'd be saying that if it was the Olympics.
I wouldn't be. It's not a best. You can't get your best lineup because it's not a best on best tournament.
I agree.
So, you know, you're already a little bit, you know.
Something about it. Yeah, I know. I mean, the tournament in general is a complete farce.
Yeah, well, we've already discussed that ad nauseum on the show, how stupid the entire concept is with this under 20, what is it, 23, 25?
Who cares?
It doesn't matter. I just don't see, you know, what is the benefit? What can he get? You know, it's not going to, you know, if you win.
I think for him, it's coaching players that actually deserve to be in the NHL.
You think he's just looking forward to the opportunity to coach a better team?
I think so, Drew. It doesn't require any travel for him.
Sure.
Not that he would care, but you know what I mean? Like, it's very convenient.
Yeah.
It is a challenge, and maybe a challenge more so for him. And I agree with you. It's not really best on best, so it really won't be the judge. The Olympics will be the judge so long as the system continues to be as it is. I don't know what it is about it. Maybe it's a little bit of the Pat Quinn 2006 thing, and I realize Quinn only won in 2002. Just felt like a step too far, a little bit too stale almost.
Did they name Ken Hitchcock an assistant?
No, Claude Julien and Joel Quenneville are the two assistants that have been named so far, with two more to be officially announced Thursday at the press.
I don't want to stir the pot here, but I mean, Doug Armstrong's the GM of the team, and Ken Hitchcock doesn't even get an assistant coaching position.
No, there's four assistants. The first two that they've announced are Quenneville and Julien. I assume Julien, because they figure he'll be unemployed by that point in time, so he'll be like Hitchcock was at the 2002 Olympics, where he had a lot of time to pre-scout.
They're all very good coaches.
Ken Hitchcock, I guess, in theory, could still be one of those assistant coaches.
Yeah, I mean, I assume I'd be surprised if he isn't.
Because Hitchcock, Lindy Ruff, Mike Babcock, that's kind of been the brain trust there.
Hitchcock is the best at breaking down a game from up high. I think they utilize him as the coach up top and realizing what teams are doing and then conveying that message down to the bench. That also, sometimes he can be a tad abrasive, I think, in terms of his message. So it's been a terrific spot for him. He's been a constant for how long? I mean, I think since 2002, guys, he's been on the staff in some form. So I expect him to be there.
Yeah, I guess we should also mention the team hasn't been formally announced. It'll happen later this week. But I thought it was interesting that in Stephen Wino's article, Ken Hitchcock wasn't mentioned. But I guess there's still a really good chance that he will be on that coaching staff. But I don't think you can read too much into this. Again, it comes down to hard decisions because Ken Holland is involved in that group. Mark Bergevin is involved in the Team Canada management group. Scott Salmond of Hockey Canada, Rob Blake, LA Kings. They have to
100,000 people.
Well,
involved.
They have to consider, Richie, all of these different possibilities, and they're probably having these conversations. I would have to imagine that Joel Quenneville was strongly considered or has been strongly considered for the head coaching job, and that's why he's an assistant. So I don't know if going into this tournament First off, I don't think this tournament is going to mean as much to Canadians as the Olympics. I think Canadians are going to watch this. I don't speak for all Canadians, by the way. But I think that this World Cup of Hockey is not going to mean as much as the 2018 Olympics or, by the way, the World Junior Hockey Championships. I think more people care if Canada wins at that.
But flawed as well in that you're not having best on best there either.
Yeah. If Canada had best on best in the World Juniors every year, they would win every year.
It always has the interest, as his point.
Yeah.
I would have more interest because you'd get, like, the guys who are top.
Olympics is best on best.
Yes, that's right.
And this World Cup of Hockey is an all-star showcase to me.
Well, it's not even, but it's...
The only interesting thing about this World Cup, to me, is that ESPN is getting back in the game.
And what that means, potentially long-term.
Yeah.
And that's a fair point, because you're right. It's not on NBC, which is surprising. It's on ESPN, which generally ignores hockey for the most part.
Andrew, I don't want to suck the life out of it, but I just mean that this tournament is going to be exciting, but I don't think it should be considered a controversial decision if Joel Quenneville isn't the head coach and Mike Babcock is. I mean, Mike Babcock is a very able coach. His track record speaks for itself. If they end up not winning this tournament, it's not because they don't have a good coaching staff in place.
Babcock gets first right of refusal based on the performance in the Olympics in the last two Olympics. I'm just a little bit surprised that he wouldn't say at this point, you know what, you know, let me take a step back. Evaluate it. What do I have to gain by being the head coach?
Well, I mean, you might think out of sight, out of mind for the Olympics next time around.
Yeah. Do you think he's going to hold on?
If Quenneville coached this time, if you're Babcock and you passed and you win and Quenneville wins, you're not getting the coach next time.
Fair point. So you think that he wants, you assume that he's going to want to be the Olympic coach.
Absolutely.
But if he loses,
those are different experiences. I mean, Vancouver at home, in Russia, I mean, South Korea. These are different environments. Absolutely. There's a total different experience as opposed to
the ACC with the corporate crowd where nobody's really cheering.
Yeah. And Mike Babcock if he loses, still has a shot.
If he loses, you think he
still has a shot if Quenneville were to lose.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's just probably playing the long game to look at the Olympics.
If you're a control freak, Ezzy, you want to control it. You think you can win. Well, you'd rather be in that position than have somebody else play.
Well, no, I think Drew raises a valid question. Nothing has ever been indicated by Mike Babcock himself that he has any type of burnout or lack of desire to be the head coach and represent Team Canada at the World Cup of Hockey and Olympics. I think he's someone who is up to the challenge and is honored to be the head coach of Team Canada, and he relishes the fact that they ask him to be the head coach and he wants to do it. I've never heard anything to the contrary, right? So I think even though he's accomplished everything, he looks at it like, I want to win another gold in 2018. I want to win the World Cup of Hockey again. You can never win enough.
I guess it's his coaching job until he A, loses, or B, publicly announces it's time for him to step away. Like Yzerman did. I mean, Yzerman could have been the general manager of this team and probably would have been if he didn't say immediately after the previous Olympics that he was going to take a step back.
I just can't wait to see Babcock coaching McDavid to see
That's a little awkward. Yeah. McDavid would have made the Team Canada.
Obviously, there's so many guys who would have made Team Canada. I mean, so many. There's a few for sure. On every team, there's a bunch of guys who would have made their own team.
You don't think the U.S. is going to want, well, I guess Austin Matthews, it's a little early for that.
Jack Eichel.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. So the whole thing, I mean, we've talked about it beyond, enough and then some. But
Jacob Trouba? Doesn't have a great
team
start.
Team North America. He's going to be on Team North America.
Yeah, for sure.
No, definitely. But anyways, it's a stupid tournament. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll discuss the greatest hockey jersey of all time. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Actually, it's NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. One final segment Tuesday evening here with NHL This Week. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 12 noon on Saturday. We'll get you set for the Jets and the Flyers. Of course, tomorrow evening, the Jets and the Leafs here on TSN 1290, featuring pre- and post-game coverage with Rick Ralph and our very own Richard Pollock. So you can stay tuned for that tomorrow evening. This segment of the show brought to you by the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba. Philanthropy is a key pillar in a strong community. That's why the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba is proud to have provided funding to over 200 organizations in 2014, supporting projects and programs that would otherwise go unfunded or underfunded. For more information about the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba, visit jewishfoundation.org or call 204-477-7520. According to the Hockey News, you know, the periodical, they have decided they've come up with the best NHL jerseys of all time. And to me, it's a surprise which jersey they have picked.
To you, not just to you, Drew.
I don't know. I can't speak for you until I hear your opinion. They have determined that the original San Jose Sharks jersey, which was a phenomenon in its day back in early 1990s.
I have it.
You have it. Was a phenomenon.
The white one.
Legit.
Pat Falloon.
The Pat. You have a white Pat Falloon one. It was the, and it wasn't even the white one that was the phenomenon. It was
number
the,
17.
It was the teal one. That, according to the Hockey News, is the best hockey jersey of all time.
By the way, I hope the guys at Keener Jerseys are listening to this segment, because I think it's an awesome segment that all hockey fans are going to enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Drew, maybe we can tweet out you know, that article and get some fans to tweet out their favorite hockey jerseys. But
sure.
To me, those San Jose Sharks jerseys are great. And, Drew, you know, I did a little research for this, and I know that you're going to ask us which jerseys we think are our favorites
yes,
of all time.
Might as well at this point.
That Sharks jersey is up there. To me, it's not my favorite, though.
No. There's no question here. It's the Montreal Canadiens.
I think it's the Blackhawks.
Really?
Red Blackhawks.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm surprised to hear you say that.
Yeah, I thought about the Habs. I thought about this quite intently, and the Red Blackhawks one for me does it. That's the detail.
It touches
the
you
color.
Deeply.
Yeah, that one is the best jersey in hockey.
Yeah, I my favorite original six.
Sure.
That's what we're doing
first.
We'll
start with that one first.
And then, well, I guess we'll give our favorite jersey of all time. But
sure.
Best original six, I had those two teams. I had Montreal number one, and then I had Chicago number two.
Now,
to
red
me,
or white?
Red.
Yeah.
And, you know, there have been books, documentaries, anything written about that Montreal Canadiens jersey. I mean, it's iconic. It's it's the Yankees of the NHL.
It
if
is.
You want to look at it like that.
Nice
so to me,
Yankees,
I can't. I mean, it's just it's the classic jersey. And then Chicago, I think, is the best logo. You know, when you compare the original six logos,
mm-hmm.
And it's just there's so much history there. And the Chicago Renaissance, winning the three Stanley Cups in the last 6 years, has brought that back. And the best thing about the original six jerseys in the NHL is they're rarely tinkered with. You see different color schemes,
perfection usually,
but you don't ever want to. You don't ever want to change the original logo. So Montreal and Chicago are the best two to me.
I you know, I'm fine with both of those suggestions. For me, it's Montreal number one. I like some of the old school Bruins ones.
Yeah,
with the actual Bruin on the logo on the emblazoned on the chest. Yeah, something about that one I like. But I mean, you know,
there's a lot more detail on that B than people realize on the middle.
It's actually interesting. A lot of jerseys, if you actually read the detailed story about it and stuff that, you know, that the guys at Keener Jerseys, you know, pick up on that you and me and we just don't, you know, see it. They're seeing it through a different prism than we are.
Jerseys are art, Drew.
Yeah.
They really are.
Sure. Okay, then let's, as we're going through this, the ugliest jersey in the NHL.
Well, I guess I'll go first. I'll jump in. To me, the ugliest jersey of the current jerseys.
Yeah, we're just talking current.
Is the Dallas Stars. I like the old Dallas Stars logo, but now they added, they kind of changed the state and star and the color scheme. I don't like it. I liked the old Dallas Stars jersey of the late 90s, early 2000s. So to me, that's the ugliest jersey in the NHL. By the way, I'm a fan of most logos and jerseys in the NHL, but we're trying to pick the ugliest and best. To me, second is Arizona Coyotes. I've never liked the Coyotes jersey.
I actually like the adjusted Coyotes jersey more, like the newest one rather than the other one.
That
but
might be because
so
I'm a born Winnipegger, and there's that whole, you know, we lost
the
our team.
Connotations.
But I've never been a fan of the Coyotes jersey. But again, I mean, it doesn't mean that I don't like the city or the team, but we're talking talking about jerseys here.
The ugliest jersey to me in the league is Anaheim. That new jersey, does nothing for me. I was in Anaheim last year too, had a game, and I went into the shop. Nothing there. The colors, just nothing. No tradition. The old jersey, at least, like the Mighty Ducks jersey before they changed to the Ducks, it had something for me. And maybe it was a movie. I don't know what it was, but this Ducks jersey to me is the worst jersey in the league.
Yeah, it's for me. It's always the Canucks.
Really?
I find the Canucks jersey just to be...
I think it's too plain right now.
Yeah, it's black.
That's fair.
I mean, the color scheme, it doesn't do anything. There's just nothing about the Canucks jersey. I mean, really, going back, the last number of Canucks jerseys really haven't been... I mean, the Blade was good, but that's just my memories.
But the Blade, what they did was they went third jersey to the Blade, and they merged the new jersey and the third jersey.
Yeah.
Like the old jersey, I guess. Do you want the old V back? Is that what you want?
No, I'm not. I don't want that back. But
their nicest one was probably the early 90s one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
The Greg Adams, unfortunately.
Pavel Bure, yeah. Sergio
the bad memory one, yeah, but at least yeah. I remember it. These ones, yeah. I mean, they're just so, I find them to be pretty.
Yeah, they're blah.
Blah.
They're blah.
Yeah, and you know, for a Canadian team, if a Canadian team can't have a good jersey, although the Senators don't have a great jersey either, for that matter.
They don't.
Yeah.
I actually like the Senators jersey.
Nicest non-original six Canadian jersey.
Well,
so take away the Leafs and the Habs.
Five horse race.
I also took the Jets because I didn't want to seem biased. Because
okay. The Jets out of the picture.
I took the Jets out, and I love the Jets logo. Let's not get that twisted here. For me, the nicest non-original six Canadian jersey is the Flames, and I've always loved the Flames jerseys. And again, they've switched them over the years a little bit, but they've always kept the flaming C there. Mm-hmm. And they've got the great Atlanta assistant patch, and they've over the years I think done a nice job with alternate jerseys. So for me, it's the Flames, and my runner up was the Oilers, and I think that goes back to all those Oilers teams that won the Stanley Cup. But they've always kept that original logo intact.
Well, they did that late 90s, early 2000s, like the Arn and Marchand group. That they got
like
rid of
the oil
shoulder patches. Yeah.
Yep.
The new Oilers, sort of orangey ones, are awful.
I like those.
Compared to the
orange
classic,
is my favorite color. So
okay, that's fine. Compared to the classic sort of, it's almost like a darker orange with the blue Oilers jerseys.
I don't even mind the color orange, just like the jersey itself. The patterns,
it's very bright.
I hear they're selling a lot of Connor McDavid jerseys down
there.
You can put them in.
You could put them in anything. But I mean, I was watching it. I was watching the Oilers Flames on Saturday night, and that was. I don't know if the HD was brighter or the lights were brighter.
Ugly jersey.
Yeah, some of those jerseys are ugly.
The Oilers are number one for me. Yeah. The traditional, the one they've gone back to.
The 80s ones.
The 80s
ones. Again, I think a lot of this has to do with nostalgia from what we remember growing up.
I like the blue Oilers.
Yeah, not the orange.
The Flames one is probably right up there as well. The Vancouver and the Ottawa ones don't do much for me.
We could spend a lot of time talking about some of those ugly early 90s jerseys. They could, you know, not early 90s, sorry, the mid-90s when they were all cartoony. Remember when the NHL first came out with the alternate jerseys?
Sure.
Some of those were just horrific.
Some of those were nice. And the third Rangers jersey, the Statue of Liberty, is one of my favorite
jerseys.
That
was a nice one. That
was the white one.
That was about the only nice one. But you remember some of the Kings ones?
The blue one was nice, too. They were ugly.
They were ugly. The Ducks, some of the other Ducks ones were pretty terrible. Last one, the nicest non-original six American jersey.
Well, for me, I took the Devils out because that would be biased because I'm a Devils fan. For me, it's the Pittsburgh Penguins. The Pittsburgh Penguins have brought that older logo back, and I know the mid-90s, they switched to a different variation of the Penguin logo. But to me, I've always loved that jersey, loved the colors. Pittsburgh always has the black and yellow. So to me, it's Pittsburgh, and honorable mentions for me are the Panthers. I've always loved that logo, and the New York Islanders.
That's mine. The Islanders.
And you know what for me is? It's the Blue Jackets alternate jersey with the actual cannon
on
it.
End the show.
With the actual cannon
on
it.
End the show.
Fine, end the show, Rory. Play the Foo Fighters. Big thanks to our guest, Michael Trakos, for joining us on the program this evening. In case you missed any of the show, it will be available for download on iTunes, also available on tsn1290.ca and on our website, illegalcurve.com.
Good show today.
Follow us on Twitter, @IllegalCurve, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba, and Keener Jerseys and Royal Sports. For producer Rory and producer Chris, for Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Until Saturday at 12 noon, we wish you good night and good luck, and thanks for listening to NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.